Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Welcome to IGN Live at E3. As always, Nintendo has a huge presence at E3, and this year is no different. From a jam-packed Nintendo Direct to tons of playable games on the show floor, Nintendo brought it all to E3 2019. Here to tell me more is Jonathan Dornbush, Casey DeFreitas, and Tom Marks from Nintendo Voice Chat. Casey's the host.
Hello.
Watch that show. Listen to it. Big news this week. Obviously, the biggest one we got, Breath of the Wild 2. Or Zelda Breath of the Wild 2.
A sequel is in development.
We don't know the name of it.
Yeah,
we don't know anything.
It's very confusing. Yeah.
Big theories so far is that this could potentially be a co-op Zelda game. Sam Claiborne at IGN interviewed Anuma, and he was like, oh, are you guys working on co-op stuff? And he's like, huh, interesting. We will see. You know,
and instead
of just being like, no. So this was obviously, I think, the biggest surprise of the show, if not one of the biggest surprises of E3 that didn't involve Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate, yeah.
Or maybe if there isn't co-op, maybe we'll be able to play as Zelda, because she's very prominent in this trailer. She's got a fancy, nice new haircut that's short and ready for adventuring.
But it's also super unclear how this is even a sequel or where it's going to fall compared to Breath of the Wild, because, like, to be really grim, right, like, most of the world is dead at the timeline. And I know Zelda, like, don't want to get into spoilers for Breath of the Wild. I don't know what the statute of limitations on that is. But, like, it's unclear whether this is before, after, in the past, in the present. It's a prequel, a sequel. Like, they're calling it a direct sequel, but we really don't know how it actually fits into, like, a timeline sense of things.
Okay.
Not really.
I mean, that's, like, the weirdest part about all this is that even when we do have an understanding of that, it's still the Zelda timeline.
It's still...
Which is still, like...
Yeah.
Do you understand the Zelda timeline?
Dude, it's very timey-wimey. I don't.
I've always described it as a plate of spaghetti. It's just, like, it's all over the place.
I don't think it matters.
No, I don't
I know that Skyward Sword was first, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
It matters. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Because they're making the Master Sword.
People are yelling yes. Yeah, you're correct. This got me thinking that we haven't really had Zelda playable in Zelda games, aside from the fact that she was Phantom Hourglass, the ghost that could possess night.
That was afraid of rats that made me so mad.
And then obviously millions of casual gamers all over the world consider the main character of Zelda to be named Zelda.
Yeah. And you'll be able to play as Zelda in Cadence of Hyrule, too, which
that's
is coming
right.
out this week.
So we don't need to worry about Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
No,
it's fine.
No.
I just put a preview up of that game. I don't know why I said that very time. I just put a preview up of that game. This is Breath of the Wild 2. I'm obviously super into it. My hope here is that it goes a little more dungeon-y.
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems to be that way. I mean, the entire... It looks like they're in a dungeon in the trailer.
It seems underground
and
of some nature.
And I'm so glad that they gave us such a big, beefy trailer to really dive into.
Yep.
Like, immediately after it finished playing, we all started re-watching it and playing it backwards. Play it backwards. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, it's like a weird punk rock or like a rock album from the 70s.
No, it's weird. It's scary.
You can sync it up with Dark Side of the Moon.
Something that's nothing like a rock album from the 70s is Animal Crossing, which got a title and a delay, the good and the bad news of E3. We got some more details about this in the Treehouse live stream. One of my favorite things about it is basically the ability to jump over rivers.
I love that.
Miranda Sanchez at IGN has been doing a tremendous job of breaking down news and details about this game. She's got tons of stuff on IGN right now, so go check that out. I figured we didn't know much about this game, and I started digging into what she was writing, and finding out that basically you start off in a tent and there are only two other villagers in your town. And by using like sort of rudimentary crafting, you can beautify the island that you're on. And more people will be like, you want to go live there? It doesn't look as like a garbage hole like you used to. And then everyone in town has to give money to Tom Nook now, which makes me feel better.
Yeah, you're all there for the same reason.
Yeah.
It's because of Tom Nook.
So he could get a top floor in his apartment.
But you're building such a nice town in this beautiful area.
I feel like he tricked people onto this island. I feel like this was a thing where he was like, come check out this island. It's great.
Island getaway.
Yeah, and there's nothing there. And he's like, okay, bye. You owe me $50,000. Like, but this is a really cool angle for Animal Crossing for me because it's basically taking the coolest thing they added to New Leaf, which was this ability to place a bridge or like build out a little fountain and customize your town a little bit. And they're saying, okay, that's the whole game, is you start with a blank slate and you get to design it. You get to build the paths, you get to place all those things. And that's so cool. That's like, it's such a great genuine evolution of what Animal Crossing is rather than just, you know, another game.
Yeah, my expectation was so much for it to just be, oh, I'm just moving to another new town and it's just going to be simple like that. But yeah, this feels really new, yet taking the core that has worked so well for so long. And I love it.
And it looks like the co-op in this game is going to be a lot more robust than the co-op in the previous Animal Crossings.
Yeah, I think there's like a larger reliance on multiplayer this time around. Obviously, totally optional, but I really love that. I think that this is a game that gets better when you play with people, when you trade with people. The communal element of all that is really wonderful to me.
We'll trade all the fruits.
Yeah, it's just a bummer that we have to wait so long to play it.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is great. You can do all sorts of fun stuff around your house and your town. We got some news about Smash Brothers.
Brand new character.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
So excited.
I assumed we would get at least one DLC character. They had to tell us. Actually, they said at the end of their tournament on Sunday that they would reveal Smash DLC. So we were expecting it. What I was not expecting were two DLC character.
Yeah.
So they open the show with the Dragon Quest heroes coming to Smash, including the most recent hero from Dragon Quest XI, and that was a really cool trailer. But I have to admit, as soon as I saw it, I kind of groaned about getting another character with a sword.
Yeah.
We really need more characters with swords. But later on in the trailer, they showed a really interesting mechanic. I have no idea how it works. But they brought up kind of a menu where you can choose abilities from the Dragon Quest series.
Yeah.
Which, I have no idea how it'll work, but that looks awesome, and I can't wait to play with it.
It's these characters and these, you know, Echo Fighters and stuff, they brought a lot of their own charm that I think I'll flat out say that a lot of the Fire Emblem dudes are lacking. You know, there's just like Sword Fighter guys, and these guys come in, they're like, slimes.
I love the Fire Emblem guys.
Yeah, I know you do. You know, that's why I felt bad making fun of them just now. I want you to jump over the couch and stab me. then obviously the Banjo-Kazooie thing, which was like, what such a wonderful surprise.
And I love the way they did that, how they had Duck Hunt.
That video,
I can't believe they did it, man. We knew it when they were doing like K-Rool and when they did Ridley. This is the ultimate fan service game, right?
Yeah.
This is them just checking every box on the like, okay, what have people joked about in the past to be in Smash Bros?
Well, and I love the implications of it for the industry, because we've been seeing this, you know, Nintendo and Microsoft partnership, whether it's in like Minecraft commercials or with Cuphead or Xbox Live, and this is just such a clear apparent like, hey, we can work together, we may be like console competitors, but we can still work together and bring things that the fans are craving and demanding. And it just, I'm so happy to have them back on the Nintendo console.
Yes.
This is like the dream wish list of every Smash Brothers fighter is finally there, except for Waluigi.
And Goku.
That's Goku.
And then it would be done.
Yeah.
No, that'd be it.
Sakurai can retire. You bring us Waluigi and Goku.
Waluigi is in the game, and he is where he should be, which is the garbage bin.
Wow.
Oh,
how dare you?
I will stand by that.
How dare you? The garbage bin. Waluigi is a top-tier Mario uncle or cousin or something.
What?
He's one of the most important, significant Mario extended family members or brothers.
He's definitely the tallest Waluigi that there ever was.
This reveal was so good, too, because it started with the Jiggy getting thrown through the window, and immediately it was like, oh, no, they're doing it.
Yeah. It I gripped Joe Scrubbles' arm when that
Well, we got to take a very quick break. Almost had a Banjo-Kazooie break. But we will be back with more Nintendo Voice Chat right after this, so please stick around. Welcome back to Nintendo Voice Chat here on IGN Live at E3. Now, E3 isn't just about seeing games, it's also about playing them with our weird little hands. So let's talk about the games we played at the show, starting with Pokemon Sword and Shield.
That was rude.
Oh, man.
I was talking about my hands, by the way.
Okay.
Yours are great. No. Everyone has great hands with
me. So we got to play the Water-type gym on the show floor at E3. We got to see the new gym leader, Nessa, and see two new Pokemon. One of them is an electric corgi, and the other one is this imp. And I don't know how I feel about the imp.
I love Yamper, though.
Yeah, Yamper is amazing. Is adorable. I did not Dynamax him because
neither did I.
He was going to get killed. So I Dynamaxed Grookey instead, and that was a wonderful time.
I did the same.
Yeah. Well, the boss, the gym leader, has a Dreadnought, and that is rock water type. Yeah. So obviously, you got to use grass against her. And I went into the stats, and I will be posting those on the wiki soon. So check out the Sword and Shield wiki for the stats for all of these Pokemon that were in my team. Because I know you guys are probably as interested in the stats as I am, right?
Like, I love more than Pokemon stats.
You talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really loved the look of the gym. And
yeah.
The,
it was like a classic gym.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But
it was,
HD.
Yes.
Well, it's so funny how much this shows how much Pokemon has and hasn't evolved at the same time, right? Because it is gorgeous looking. It's so a different scale. I really like the look. I really like the combat. I really like the new Pokemon and the look of them and the world and the design of all that. And then it's still like a really basic maze button puzzle, right? Like that's the gym is just you press buttons and then the right order to turn off the colored waterfalls. Yep. And that's not a bad thing by any means. It's just so fundamentally what Pokemon gyms have always been, kind of in this really new wrapper.
Well, it was like even the last game, you would go into like a basement and there would just be like 60 conveyor belts. And you're like, what is this? Who built this? Now, Casey, you do have a small beef with this game, as they say.
I have one complaint. I know a lot of people share in the sentiment, but during the Treehouse segment, Masuda said that you cannot transfer Pokemon that are not part of the Galar Pokedex. So what that means is that if you cannot already natively catch the Pokemon in Pokemon Sword and Shield, you will not be able to transfer old Pokemon into the game. Oh, and I don't think this is permanent. I'm sure this will come out in updates. Maybe they'll introduce more raids, and that's how they'll introduce more Pokemon. Because, I mean, more than 800 Pokemon being modeled in this high-res game is probably a lot of work and really time-consuming. So maybe they'll roll it out in the future, but at the start, it will not be transferred. Pokemon won't be transferable from Pokemon Home that are not in the regional Pokedex.
Yeah, it's a tough one, right? Because it's like, obviously you want all of your legacy content to come over, but you do have to understand that, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I feel like Sakurai would have pulled it off.
Yeah, no, probably.
Throwing it out there. That man doesn't see.
Don't do that. Crunch
every Mon is here. Sorry.
Well, you had your Nintendo dreams come true. I did as well today. I got to play The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. I played a 15-minute demo where they basically were like, can you get to the end of the demo? And I was like, yes, I can.
And everyone else was saying, no one's ever gotten to the end of this demo.
Yeah. And so I felt bad because the Nintendo rep was like, if you go to the beach, you can get the sword. And I was like, oh, I know. So this is a game I have completely memorized. So that me speedrunning it is not indicative of how most normal people will play it. But I found it really charming, and I found a lot of the little new details really well done. There's a lot of quality of life stuff. If you're watching the video, Link just picked up one of those acorns, and instead of being prompted with this very old-school Game Boy dialogue screen, which was like two paragraphs, it just sort of snaps back in and snaps back out, and you're right back in there. Obviously, with more buttons, you can map things easier. You have sword and shield and jump automatically mapped to buttons already. But what I really like about this game is going into houses and exploring and walking into caves and seeing all the weird little details in the periphery. Even in the first house you wake up in the game, there's little like picture frames of the families on the wall, and very, very Nintendo, just Nintendo charm everywhere.
The art style of it is just so endearing, and like from the first trailer, I loved it, and seeing this whole demo, I was actually playing with Pear. Mm-hmm. He was the one controlling it, and it was funny seeing like what he did remember, and also what he like, oh, is it left? No, it's I have to go back down and around to figure out where to go. But everything, even when he did know so much of it, it was still such a delight to see the new character designs, the way little parts of the environment have changed, and just like, as Link in, we got into the dungeon as Link sort of goes through a part of the wall that turns around the door, and seeing him kind of like plop into the door, and then it just turns around.
It's so cute.
It's adorable.
And so the second time I got to see the demo was Tom Marks right here playing it, and me basically just standing over his shoulder and being like, dig right there. Open that door. Go to there. Oh, yeah. And then there's the amiibo, which I've already pre-ordered two of. And there's a special edition that's on Amazon that I got, and there's also a UK, like a European one that has a Game Boy Steelbook. But I digress. I will find a way to get all these things. But no, Tom did some of the most sort of esoteric and weird stuff in this game.
I didn't even go in the forest.
Yeah,
I was about to go in the forest, and I was Brian was with me, and I was like, wait. What else can we do? And so we like went fishing,
yep.
And we did the crane game, and then
so
we went down
like
that
little
trading path.
Yeah, and when you went fishing, you noticed a little glimmer in the seaweed at the bottom, and then you cast your line out there and caught a bottle.
Yeah.
And then a fish stole it.
Tried to reel it in, and a fish grabbed it. It was great.
The original game didn't have that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm already starting to see, like, oh, this is like a director's cut. This is a special edition. There's little details in there. We also initiated the trading sequence, which, if you've played this game before, is when you start grabbing items, and basically you get a Yoshi doll from a vending machine, you bring it to a kid who wants it, and the kid's mom is like, thank you, here's a bow. And you bring the bow to a character that wants one, and then they give you, like, a can of dog food.
Yeah.
And then you bring it to that alligator dude.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that.
We
went down that path, but my favorite part was Brian had just memorized the routes. So I got this Yoshi doll, and I was like, wait, where am I supposed to bring this? And he was like, two screens up, one screen to the left, there's a lady in a house with a baby, you go into her, she gives you that, then you take the bow down, two screens to the left, and I was like, dang, Brian, like, what the heck?
I felt bad. We also played Luigi's Mansion 3, starring Gooigi.
Gooigi.
A word I will never feel comfortable saying on camera. What'd you guys think of this?
I felt bad for the ghosts. Tom, tell us more.
Well, like, Luigi is savage in it, man.
Yeah.
He'll grab him, and when you do that, when you, like, get him all the way in, you just ram A, and he just, like, swings and hits him on the ground back and forth, and it's like, it's really savage.
I wrote our preview for Luigi's Mansion 3, and my first, the thing that it felt the most like is when Hulk grabs Loki in the first
episode. Yes.
That and just slams them around with pure joy and delight. But I like Luigi's Mansion has been one of my like favorite sort of like B tier, I guess, Nintendo series mm-hmm. that kind of has always been under the radar, but it's just so charming. There's not really games like it. And this definitely, to me, felt like it maintains the core of it while just adding onto it and onto it, even if that additive nature is Gooigi. Who scares me in so many ways, but is actually pretty useful in actually playing the game.
One of the things we noticed that's really disturbing is that when you use Gooigi, Luigi himself like slumps over as if his soul has left his body.
Yeah.
And we asked Nintendo about that, and they did not really have a substantial comment.
No, but Janet Garcia did write a giant article all about everything you would ever need to know about Gooigi, mm-hmm. including what it's made out of. So you should look at that if you want to know
He's
more about
He's a time
Gooigi.
Traveler. That is a true
Gooigi?
Fact.
Yeah.
Gooigi is a time
what?
Traveler. Yes.
No.
He was sent back to the original events of the first Luigi's Mansion.
He's made out of coffee.
What?
Right? That's what Janet said. It's mixture of like coffee and, I don't know, some
this
other
is a weird fever dream.
Weird things.
There he is. Is this the year of Gooigi?
I hope not.
I hope so.
On the actual game, I had a lot of fun with it, and I'm very excited to play more of it. I was a little teeny tiny bit mixed on the format and the presentation.
Yeah.
Because each screen is basically like a little diorama sort of thing that you're seeing from a very kind of fixed sideways angle. Like you're almost looking into a playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's fun, and they're really cool levels, but they're also... I had more trouble, and maybe this is just because it's the demo, but I had trouble kind of feeling the scale of everything. It didn't really feel like Luigi's Mansion 1 where you were exploring this big sprawling mansion. It just kind of felt like you were going from diorama box to diorama box.
Yep.
And that wasn't like a bad thing again because I did have fun with the game. It just might make it feel a little bit more limited overall, a little more segmented. But of course, we don't know the overall structure beyond that.
But
well, I'm really excited.
Tom beat the demo and
yes.
he got an elevator button.
Yeah. Right.
At the end.
So I was at a preview event for it, like right before E3 happened. And essentially, the structure is you're at this hotel and the elevator stops working because all the buses buttons go missing. And your job is to find those buttons to successively go up each of the floors. And
Which
each
is awesome.
Floor,
I love that.
And each floor is differently themed. And they didn't really tell us what the themes were, but they were like, so, you know, this is a more medieval theme.
Yeah.
And then you'll go to another floor and it may be a more like jungle-esque themed area.
Oh, that's really cool.
So And obviously, I don't think this is the entire floor, mm-hmm. I would assume. Like, I think they probably put you a little further into it. So I'm very curious to see what the scale of it all is.
Me too. I want to speed round through a couple other games we played. We played Marvel's Ultimate Alliance 3. We got to play that in co-op today.
Yeah.
Lots of really fun stuff there. I think my favorite Avengers game of E3. I'll say that. I mean, I didn't play the other one. I don't think anyone really did.
I saw gameplay of the other one, but I did our preview for this one too and got to talk to both Marvel Games and Team Ninja about this game, and I think it's really, really going to be just like fan service the game for Marvel fans.
Yep.
And as someone who like loved X-Men Legends back in the day and the Ultimate Alliance games, I think it really retains the core of it, but you get a sense of the developer side of things, whereas like Team Ninja, they're known for making hard games.
Yeah.
And they were talking to me a little bit. There are higher difficulty levels in this game you'll be able to attempt. There are these endgame rifts that are much more difficult. And also when you're playing just one person on a screen, you can actually kind of go closer into more of like a third person action combat.
Oh, that's
neat. It's like a little bit more of a hero camera, they called it. And so they're doing a lot, I think, to, you know, maintain what people love of this sort of dungeon crawler button mashy experience, but actually give it a lot more variety and complexity than I would have given it credit for.
Because we played multiplayer today, and I think easiness was bumped up, or difficulty was dropped down. And it's totally fun. It's like very arcadey, very kind of button mashy, but it scratched that itch for like just a fun laid back comic book game. We got to do some cool stuff, like a couple of us all picked spider themed characters at the same time.
Oh, cool.
And just unleash this like mountain of webs. Venom turned into a plasma shark. It's weird. It's great. Swinging around as Spider-Man was like really fun and cool. You can kind of just hold down B and track the course with your co-op players.
Yeah, and with the team stuff, they have team bonuses come back as a big thing for getting through the game. But you can also do like partial team bonuses if you just have two or three.
We played Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games, the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games. That's a very different game than all other ones we talked about today. Casey whooped my ass all over that game. Really did.
He beat me in archery.
I want to point out a strange thing that happened in that game. Casey and I fought in karate, and I was Mario, barefoot. She was Sonic with shoes, and I lost to her, but Tails, who was nowhere present at all, came in third place. That's nonsense.
In a one-on-one karate.
The Olympics are rigged. That's all I have to say about Mario and Sonic at the Olympics. Casey, you did play Dauntless.
Yes. So I've been playing Dauntless a lot, and I got to play it on the Switch today, and this is a game that I've been wanting to talk about on NBC for a long time because I really like it. On the Switch, I'm not going to lie, it did run a little bit rough, but the Dauntless developers, Phoenix Labs, have been really candid and are constantly working on it to make it better. Like, for example, there was a particular fight that didn't run great on the PS4, and they've already released a patch to fix that. So it's kind of like Monster Hunter, so I guess you guys would be very surprised as to why I like
I'm
it.
I'm floored that you're
I know.
Into this.
But it is a little bit more accessible because you don't have as much inventory management, and if all of your teammates die, you can still keep fighting. And I've had that happen quite a few times where I'm one-on-one-ing a monster for the last 10 minutes of the fight, but I can still do it. It's not a complete waste of time just because your teammates can't, you know, pull you through. And it's just a fun, cool game with different weapon types, and you can do really cool things with your armor loadouts and the skills that you can use. And the monsters, instead of being more animal-like to fit into a world, they're all built to be kind of more boss-like, I think is the best way to point out the difference between the monsters in Monster Hunter and Dauntless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very popular game, and it's one of those things that when you go over to Nintendo's booth at E3, they have a massive section for Pokemon and Link's Awakening and Luigi's Mansion. They built like a Disney-esque haunted house. And then over on the side, there's just like this huge hall of just third-party games just kind of hanging out on individual kiosks, and that's really cool to see. I'm excited to go over there tomorrow and just get my hands on a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, Dauntless is free to play and just hit 10 million players.
That's
and then they
crazy.
Got to be on the Nintendo Direct, so I'm very happy for that.
Now you can play it anywhere you go.
Yeah. You
just
can.
Slightly blurrier.
Yeah, just okay. Slightly blurrier.
Okay. Tom, you're one of the biggest Hollow Knight fans I've ever met. That is another tremendously popular game that found a huge audience on Switch. But there's more content. Is it a full-on sequel?
Oh, yeah.
It is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did this start as
Brian. Oh, Brian.
Okay,
oh,
here no. we go.
Let me tell you. Hollow Knight Silksong is a full sequel. It was a game that started out as a stretch goal for the original Hollow Knight's Kickstarter as a extra playable character within Hollow Knight, And they said, okay, actually, we can't do that because it would screw up some of the jumps, so we'll do like a little extra area for this character. And then they're like, actually, it's getting a little bigger, so we'll do an expansion for this character. And then finally, when they were going to announce the expansion, they were like, actually, we made it way too big, and it's a new game. So it's a completely new game. There are more enemies in this game than there are the first one, and they're all new. None of them are the same enemy as the first game.
That's crazy.
And the craziest part about this is at E3, it is in that third-party section that you were talking about. There are four little switches just with Hollow Knight Silksong playable. Team Cherry didn't even tell anybody that it was playable there until today. So I literally, the first thing I did in the morning was run straight to that booth and play Silksong, and I am so thrilled with it. I am so happy about it. I'm so happy with what it is. It's basically Hollow Knight, but faster. It's Hollow Knight where you have, and this is an upgrade that you have to get, but you have a dash. And your heal, instead of being like this thing where you charge up and heal one point of health kind of slowly, is almost instant, and it heals three of your hits instead of one, but you have to use your entire, like, basically magic bar to use it. So the entire game is so much quicker, and it's more about, like, getting in those hits when you can, because if you're at one health, you can't just, like, run back and heal if you have a little magic. What you need to do is, like, be aggressive to get that healing and then pull back up.
That's awesome.
It's just so, so cool, and I am so excited. I only got to play two levels, but I'm just absolutely so excited to play more of this game.
And we got some footage today of you playing in handheld mode on Switch. So that's on IGN right now. You can go check
it out. It's actually in TV mode.
Even better.
Yeah.
Do we have a release date for that?
No, so they just said coming soon in the Direct. We don't know.
Wow. So in the meantime, you should check out Hollow Knight on Switch. I want to give a quick plug to the eShop, which is having like a massive sale right now. Some really great indie games on there, including Blossom Tales, which is like the closest thing you can get to playing Link to the Past on Switch. But for now, that is all the time we have for NVC this week. But be sure to get new episodes of Nintendo Voice Chat every week on IGN, YouTube, and whatever you use to get your podcast. We literally talk about nothing but Nintendo every episode. Seriously, that's it. So you'll love it. There's plenty more coming up on our final day of IGN Live at E3, so don't go away.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.